Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I'm here to help you make peace with food. That means to stop binging, stop thinking about food all the time, and start feeling like a normal eater so you can lose weight without dieting. Last week, I talked about how to stop feeling self-conscious, and I also shared some ideas about how to stop letting other people's opinions have so much influence about the way over the way you feel about yourself. I also gave you some tips on how to stop fat shaming or body shaming yourself. And what I heard from quite a few listeners was a request for more tips, more about how not to shame yourself, more information about how to, you know, what is this fat shaming and how do we stop it? So ask and you shall receive. That's what I'm going to talk about today. If you have something on your mind that you would like to share, it doesn't have to be about fat shaming. It could be anything that's eating at you. Give me a call at 818-602-4929. Again, 818-602-4929. I'd love to hear from you. Okay, so I thought I'd share some of my thoughts and tips. I took these from an article I wrote for the American Psychoanalytic Association a couple of years ago, actually about a year and a half ago. So you're probably familiar with the saying, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me. This is so, so, so wrong. Words are powerful. Words hurt. When your bones break, they heal. But words can leave lasting scars. Verbal bullying causes deep shame, humiliation, and pain, and also leads to lifelong self-esteem problems. So in insulting, criticizing, ridiculing, and stereotyping people on the basis of their weight is a form of verbal bullying, and that's what we call fat shaming. Now, Donald Trump first brought fat shaming to wider public awareness a couple of years ago because he referred to the former Miss Universe, Alicia Machado, as Miss Piggy. And he has often commented about lots of people's weight, shaming everyone from Rosie O'Donnell to Chris Christie. And he even called his wife, Melania, a blimp when she was pregnant. Okay, so unfortunately, this kind of fat shaming happens all the time and in many, many contexts. And women are not the only targets. I just mentioned Chris Christie. Governor Chris Christie's size has been the subject of a lot of scrutiny, including before he had weight loss surgery, including a debate on whether his weight should preclude him from seeking higher office. Oh, he's too big to be president. Also, back in the 2016 Olympics, there was an Ethiopian swimmer who was derisively called Robel the Whale in social media. And celebrities and athletes are not the only ones who suffer from fat shaming. Many, many people experience it in their daily lives. And often, the people doing the shaming have no idea that their words are hurtful. Well, sometimes they have an idea, but sometimes they really don't. So why do people fat shame? People shame other people to elevate themselves. By putting others down, by denigrating others, they feel better about themselves. And it's common to see and criticize qualities in others that you can't tolerate, they can't. Let's not make it about you. Let's make it them. Those fat shamers. They see things in others that they can't, because they can't see it in themselves. It's called projection. Something you cannot tolerate in yourself is not about you. It's them. For example, back to Trump. He's very vitriolic in his statements about overweight people, but he is also visibly overweight. So it's sort of a, hey, it's not me who's got the problem, it's you mentality. Also, a lot of people see fat or weight as signifying laziness, weakness, lack of control. And by pointing the fingers at other people, they reassure themselves that those attributes belong to other people, but not to themselves. So the communication is, oh, you're the one who lacks control, not me. And the impact of fat shaming is really pervasive. In a Twitter campaign inviting tweeters, people on Twitter, to share their personal stories, one woman reported that her doctor suggested bariatric surgery so she'd have, quote, better luck with the fellas. Now, why was this woman seeing that doctor in the first place? What had she done to deserve this unsolicited advice? Was this a love doctor? No. This woman had sought medical care for an ear infection. She goes in for an ear infection and is basically told, hey, get bariatric surgery. You'll have luck with the guys. Another woman reported that she lost 30 pounds due to depression and pneumonia. And her doctor encouraged her to, quote, keep up the good work. Oh, yeah. Stay depressed. Stay sick. You'll be thin in no time. Way to go. There's something so wrong with this, right? Now, in my clinical practice and my daily life, I hear from people who absolutely hate getting together with their families because they're afraid they're going to hear things like, oh, do you really need to eat that? Or, I thought you were watching your weight. You know, should you be having that? Or, oh, even, you know, more overt, you sure have packed on the pounds. If you think people don't say that to other people, oh, I am here to tell you, they do. And these kinds of comments create a lot of shame. And shame is the deeply painful sense that there's something wrong with you. Guilt is, I did something wrong, or I didn't take action when I should have. So it's about what you've done or not done. Shame is there's something wrong with you. So shame is the most painful and difficult kind of affect to tolerate. And also, studies show that people who are fat shamed are at higher risk for depression and also eating disorders. Alicia Machado, Miss Universe, she said she struggled with eating disorders for several years after being publicly humiliated by Donald Trump. And according to the UK charity Beat, Beating Eating Disorders, as many as 65% of people with eating disorders have been bullied or fat shamed. That is a staggering statistic, 65%. And fat shaming is also connected with discrimination. According to the National Eating Disorders Association, weight discrimination is more prevalent than age or gender discrimination. So it's bad, and you probably don't need me to tell you. You know it's bad. So here's probably the most important thing that I want to talk about, which is, what about fat shaming yourself? It's awful when it happens from other people to you, or when you see it happening out in the world. But what about when you shame yourself? Now, the experience of being shamed often leads people to shame themselves. As Chris Christie did when he went on The Late Show with David Letterman, and he was eating a donut and telling fat jokes at his own expense. Right? He joined in the joke and fat shamed himself. So, as you guys probably know, in my private practice, I specialize in eating disorders, and I hear from countless people who talk about themselves in the most horrible fat-shaming, fat-attacking ways. For example, they'll say something like, I'm just thinking about what someone has said recently. They'll be like, I had some pizza at the party last weekend, and afterwards, I thought, you are disgusting, you have no willpower, you make me sick. So this person went to a party, had some pizza, and afterwards just totally shamed themselves. And notice the switch in perspective from the first person. Yeah, I ate some pizza. I went to the party. I ate some pizza. I, first person, to the second person, shame voice. You are disgusting. You have no willpower. You make me sick. And that's them talking to themselves. You make me sick. And then for if you lack the ability to self-soothe without food, these kinds of self-loathing comments lead to eating for comfort, and that creates a vicious cycle. And I find that many people out there use food to escape their own mean voice and self-criticism. Their own fat-shaming voice is so unbearable that they end up using food to comfort or numb or distract themselves. So, you know, we as individuals and as a society have got to take fat-shaming, body-shaming seriously. Not only is it offensive, highly offensive, it causes depression, anxiety, shame, humiliation, emotional pain, and it diminishes people's self-worth. So these are my thoughts on fat shaming and body shaming. Let me know yours or anything else you want to talk about. The number here is 818-602-4929. It's 818-602-4929. Okay, so I also wanted to bring you some other people's ideas about this topic. So here are some tips from journalist Jacqueline Andriakos. I hope I said that right. Jacqueline Andriakos in an article called How to Stop Fat Shaming Yourself. And she says, it's time to take real action towards loving the skin you're in. If you say things like, I hate my cellulite, that cookie is going straight to my hips, you might think it's no biggie to go low on your looks now and then. But words like these eat away at your confidence and self-worth. Fat talk comments are like Velcro. They stick to you and they can start to become your identity, says Dr. Cynthia Bulick, who's a professor of eating disorders and nutrition at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine. She says, put a sock in it. The first step is to identify your body bashing habits and then replace them with more forgiving and actually accurate thoughts, which is very good advice. Of course, easier said than done, which is why I'm sharing this with you. Remember, for those of you who are members of my Kick the Diet Habit program, you know one of my favorite things to say is practice makes progress. So I'm telling you all, practice makes progress. Don't worry if you don't get this right the first time. It will become more of how you respond to yourself, and you'll learn to be self-soothing instead of self-attacking. So body bashing can be obvious, right? Like, oh, I look so fat. Oh, my thighs are thunder, whatever. But it also manifests in very subtle ways. So you have to be aware of how subtle that this kind of fat shaming, fat talk, body shaming can be. And so there are some suggestions in this article. And the first one is, and this is hard, I'm just telling you guys, this is hard, but I know you're up to it. You can do this. First step is get in front of a mirror. Get in front of a mirror and actually look at it. Face the mirror. And you look at your reflection and you note any negative thoughts about your appearance that pops into your head. So the mirror is where fat talk is very automatic. We tend to focus on flaws. We see things often that nobody else would see, or that they don't care, or you know, we magnify perceived flaws or real flaws, and everything else we just don't even see. So spot the silent fat talk. Keep tabs on the nonverbal body bashing habits you do every day. For example, you know, sucking in your stomach or pinching your thighs like, oh, look at this. The term for this is called body checking, and it is it's very damaging because it just makes you feel perpetually bad about your body. Then the third thing is watch for small critical moments. Like maybe when you're looking at a menu, you tell yourself, oh, you know, I I feel like a burger, but I shouldn't have the burger. I should have salad. Or you think, oh, look at her. She's only eating salad. I should only eat salad. Or I wish I could pull off skinny jeans like that woman over there. So fat talk is not just I feel fat, the overt form, or I'm so fat. Fat talk is all the ways we measure our bodies, from policing our calories to comparing our looks to other people. And that is from Rebecca Stritchfield, who's the author of Body Kindness. And so replacing the negative thoughts with the healthier ones, that's the way to go. So again, practice makes progress. Give yourself body positive comments. It's kind of like getting new glasses. You know, if you've ever gotten glasses for the first time, or you get a new prescription, you know how you put them on and they feel kind of awkward at first, like maybe they're too strong, or they just feel weird. But you keep wearing them, and pretty soon you get used to them, and they just feel like natural. So it's like that. Or it's, you know, the first time, this is the example that I really like to use because it resonates with a lot of people. Like the first time you go to the gym, right? You go to the gym and you're looking at this equipment and you got to figure out how to use it, and you do it and it feels awkward, and you're just like, you're sitting in something like, okay, what do I do with my arms, what do I do with my legs, and it hurts. And you just got to think all the time about what you're doing, and it's painful and it's awkward, and then you keep doing it and you keep doing it and you keep doing it, and one day you realize you've walked into the gym, sat down, used the equipment without giving it another thought. So that's what I mean when I say practice makes progress. The more that you do it, the more automatic it will be eventually. But at the beginning, I'm being honest, at the beginning, it feels awkward and wrong to be nice to yourself. It feels awkward and wrong to soothe yourself. It feels awkward and wrong to compliment yourself. But in time, it will feel natural. I promise. The next step that they give in this article is play Never Would I Ever. So go over the list of fat talk remarks that you realize that you make towards yourself, and ask yourself whether you would say them to your friend or your daughter. Now, when I suggest this, like, would you say that to a friend of yours when someone attacks themselves? They always look horrified. Oh my God, that's so mean. I would never, ever say that. I guess that's why this is called the never, ever list. So often we treat ourselves in a very different way than we treat other people. Maybe we treat ourselves the way we were treated. Maybe we treat ourselves the way we learned to treat ourselves in this harsh way for whatever reason. But we often treat others the way we would have liked to be treated. So with warmth and compassion and understanding and forgiveness and, you know, all of that, whereas we are so hard on ourselves. So, you know, if you wouldn't say it to someone you love, don't say it to yourself. Be someone you love to yourself. The next tip is to be body neutral. Stritchfield says it's not realistic for everyone to go from being body negative to body positive right away. You're allowed to have vulnerable moments, she says, but you have to shift the criticism. So instead of, oh, I look gross in this outfit, say, I'm not gross. I'm just not feeling my most confident right now, and that's okay. Kind of shift the perspective instead of making it about you, that you're gross. I'm just not feeling my best, right? It even sounds better when I say it. It sounds less shameful. She also recommends build a library. Think up a whole list of kind thoughts about yourself. And then when a self-critical thought surfaces, chase it with something from the kind list. And the compliments do not have to be body related. You know, like saying, well, I give great advice can be just as effective as I have awesome boobs. And she also says that fat talk is contagious. It spreads like a virus of negative energy, which is so true. So cultivate more body positivity towards others and yourself with these tips. The next suggestion is have no fat talk zones. Social, when people get together socially, they often use body bashing as kind of a bonding experience. Like, oh, I can't believe that I ate that, or I can't believe how much weight I've gained. Oh, I know, me too. I can't believe how much weight I've gained. No, I'm bigger, and all of this stuff. All of that, it just becomes self-perpetuating, and then it snowballs. And you know what? We have so many more interesting thoughts to think and things to feel other than talking about our bodies. It's interesting. A friend of mine moved from LA to New York, and she was so surprised because she said that when she first got to New York, she didn't have a lot of friends. Sometimes she would go out just like go take herself to lunch or something before she had people to go to lunch with or dinner. And so she'd be sitting there, and naturally when you're having lunch or dinner by yourself, you can hear conversations around you. And she said that she realized that in LA, people talk about what they're eating, what they're going to eat, what they're not going to eat, how good they feel about themselves because they haven't eaten it, and this kind of thing. And she said, in New York, people are talking about ideas, what's going on in politics, what's happening in the world. And it really struck her, which is not to say that every conversation in LA is vacuous and every conversation in New York is highbrow. Of course not. But the point is that, we have minds. Let's use them. Let's talk about something more relevant and interesting and important than the size of our thigh gap. Next tip is don't rush to judge. Catch yourself whenever you open a magazine and think a critical thought. Catch yourself whenever you're on the street and silently condemn a stranger's shape or appearance. Bulick says we're oddly compelled to judge. And she encourages you to call yourself out after each cruel thought. Remind yourself, this is the kind of thinking that perpetuates fat talk, not cool. So recognize when you do it to other people, if you do it to other people, and of course, recognize it when you do it to yourself. And I think the same recommendation applies if you think nasty things about yourself. It's good to say, hey, not cool. This is not good. Not okay with this. Next suggestion, dish out props. Give at least one genuine compliment every day. The goal of this is to really work the muscle of thinking with compassion about yourself and other people all the time. You know, the more that you see the good, the more you'll see the good. I like to say, look, you can drive down the 405 in LA. You can drive from my office in Sherman Oaks, which is at the 101 and the 405, to the airport, all the way straight shot right down the 405. And you can say, hey, you know what? LA drivers are terrible, terrible drivers. And you can drive to the airport, and there the terrible drivers will be. They will cut you off. They will flip you off. They will zigzag in and out of traffic. And you'll be like, yep, they're those LA drivers. They are bad drivers. I'm right. They're bad. Or you can have the premise of, hey, you know what? LA drivers have kind of a bad reputation, but I think that LA drivers are actually pretty, pretty nice, pretty decent, and they're good at sharing the road. And you can drive the same length of highway, of freeway, down from the 405 or from the airport back to my office, and you know what? There will be the nice drivers. They'll let you in. They'll wave at you. They'll smile. They'll make room for you. And you'll be like, yeah, see. LA drivers are actually very good. They're very nice. We're just so zen here. Now, here's the thing. Which is true? Both. Both are true. There are good drivers and there are bad drivers. It's what you choose to focus on that matters. So think about that as you think about yourself. You have good qualities and bad qualities, whether those qualities are physical or have to do with your personality. Doesn't matter. What are you going to focus on? Yes, you want to take for granted that you're working on making yourself the best person that you can be, but don't overlook the good drivers. Because when you acknowledge yourself for who you are, that you the qualities that you like about yourself, guess what? You're going to feel pretty good. And when you feel pretty good, hey, you're not going to have to use food to feel better. When you feel good, you don't need to comfort yourself with food. When you feel good, lunch becomes lunch because you're not using food to cope. There's nothing to cope with. So we want to take as many opportunities to just feel good as you are as possible. So then I have some more tips from certified nutritionist and health coach Natalie Onyu. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Onyu. She wrote an article for Tiny Buddha, and she starts out by reminding us of a great quote by Lucille Ball. She says, "Love yourself first, and everything else falls into line." And I will stop there because I have a call. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Nina. This is Larry from very rainy Burbank. How are you?
I am fine. I'm in very rainy Sherman Oaks. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, if you have water wings, it's awesome. But I like the rain, actually. It's nice. Yeah, I've been listening to what you're saying, and it reminded me, if I'm on the freeway, if I'm in a fantastic mood, someone could, drive right at me, and I'll say, wow, that was close. If I'm in a lousy mood, it's completely different. Same input. And it reminded me of a story about a Native American child asked his great-grandfather about, and I forget, something, a story about wolves or something, and I always say it wrong, and I'm wondering if you know what that is. Does that make sense? If you can run that by us?
Yes, I know what you're talking about. It's the one where the grandfather says, there are different wolves. One is a wolf of compassion and kindness and love, and one is a wolf of greed and aggression and et cetera. And I'm not telling it very well, but this is what I recall just off the cuff. And then the little boy says, well, which one is real or something like that? And the grandfather says, the one you listen to. I'll have to look that up and tell that better next week.
Sorry, I put you on the spot. I always butcher the intro, but the punchline, quote unquote, is the kid says, the old man says, in life you have two wolves, and the little boy says, well, which one is the one that runs your life? And the old wise Native American man says, the one that you feed.
Oh, the one you feed. Yes, exactly. Right. Exactly.
And I know I've been feeding one wolf and starving another, and not the right ones, but it's real simple, but it certainly applies to, to all of what you're talking about today.
Yes, I thank you for bringing that story back to my awareness. I'm going to be actually gone next week, but the next time I'm here, I'm going to share that story because it is such a perfect allegory for what we're talking about here on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I believe reality is perception, that what we call objective reality. And I know this is getting philosophical to the point of, well, I don't know, it's getting too philosophical.
Nah, we can be philosophical. My mother's a philosophy professor. I'm all about being philosophical.
Okay, good. Well, reality is perception. And I think people who get ahead come into adulthood or even come into childhood perceiving the good, and those who don't are self-protective or bitter or whatever and perceive the bad. And that's right there at that fork in the road is a game changer. Completely, reality is perception.
Yeah, and when you said that, I recall someone telling me that she got like all A's on a report card and one A minus. So she gets like six A's and one A minus. And what does her family focus on? Why the A minus? What happened there? You know, mm-hmm. and this was instead of wow, six A's or five A's and one A minus. That was awesome. It was no mention of all the A's and just focusing on the A minus as if it were shameful. And those right. are the kind of messages that teach us to look at, you know, disregard what's good and focus on the perceived, to your point, mm-hmm. the perceived bad.
It reminds me of a story about the elderly ancient grandmother who bought her grandson two sweaters for his birthday. One was yellow and one was green. So one day to show his love and gratitude, he puts on the green sweater and says, "Hi, Grandma." She says, "What the hell is wrong with you? You don't like yellow?"
Okay, Larry, I have to tell you, this literally happened to me. My grandmother gave me two shirts. I tried on one and said, "Look, it looks great." And she looked at me and she said, "What, you don't like the other one?" So, mm-hmm. yes, it's probably a Jewish grandma thing, but absolutely, yeah. It can happen. These kinds of messages are just crazy making. What do you do with that? No matter what you do, it's somehow wrong.
Right, and you know, I guess some of the habits you reference in that list, and I'm wondering if you can repeat where that list comes from, because I came in late, but we're, you know, later on in the show, but how you see things, those specific steps can help you change that perception. So the reality changes. It's like in physics, the act of observing atoms changes the atom. This probably even more so.
Yeah, and that when people talk about neuroscience or changing the pathways in your brain, I mean, when we think differently, our brains respond differently, and that's how we create new neural pathways mm-hmm. and all of that. So, I will share where that came from on the description of the show. If you're looking at it in iTunes or on the LA Talk Radio website, I'll definitely put a link to the actual article.
Okay, great. I'll look that up. Okay. Anyway, other than that, it's raining and I'm on deadline, so I have to scoot. Sorry.
Well, as always, thank you for calling in and for sharing your thoughts and for reminding me of that great Native American story, which I will share with everybody someone else will have written it and I will read it, so I'll get it right in a couple of weeks. Good luck.
That's why I brought it up, is because I butcher it every time. I only know the final thing, the one that you feed. Okay.
Well, thank you, Larry, and good luck with your deadline and call in again.
I will do that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that is such a great story. The one that you feed. So I will be sharing that story in its or that allegory in its entirety very soon. So back to the other tips from from this health coach Natalie and you. I'm not sure how Natalie. I hope I'm not butchering your name. I'm very sorry. So she tells this story in this article for Tiny Buddha. She tells the story that she was sitting one day on her bedroom floor and she was just about in tears. And she was surrounded by all the clothes she'd just tried on before a night out with her friends. And the same thoughts were just replaying and replaying through her mind. And these thoughts were, "You're fat, you're ugly, and you're disgusting for letting yourself get this way." Notice the second person, the mean, self-critical, fat-shaming second person, by the way. And she says she recalls this just sitting there, like, just despondent, thinking these horrible thoughts. And she cringes when she thinks about that, because the way she used to speak to and about herself was so harsh. And she said she would never think that of another person, never even think it, let alone talk to them like that. Yet it was second nature for her to say these things to herself. So what did she do that night? Didn't like how any of her clothes looked, surrounded by a pile of clothes on the floor and feeling horrible. She canceled on her friends. She was so unhappy with how she looked and how she felt that she couldn't face going out and worrying about what other people thought of her shape, her size. And she said, you know, isn't it ironic that when we feel so low about ourselves, that's the time when we're most self-absorbed, she says. We retreat into a small bubble that's all about us, as if the people in the bar that night would care what she looked like. They were there to have a good time with their friends. She said she should have been as well. And she talks about how she struggled to lose weight during that time because she couldn't stay consistent with food. She couldn't build new healthy habits. She'd do well for a while, but then she'd have one off moment and give up feeling like a failure. And it was a vicious cycle. So she was not consistent. And so she just had this low self-esteem, and then she would eat to feel better. And of course, if you listen to the show, you can hear some of the things that happened in this moment that are problematic. The one-off moment, all or nothing, right? One-off moment, you're either doing something perfectly or you're a failure. And the idea of eating one cookie means you've blown it, so you might as well eat the whole box. That kind of thinking is never good. And feeling like a failure, that's related to shame, because feeling like a failure is about yourself. Whereas, okay, I failed to stick to my meal plan today, but, you know, it was just one cookie or three or whatever, and I'm not a failure. I just didn't do it perfectly. My different kind of way of thinking about it. So the night that she canceled on her friends was really a turning point for her. And she realized this was not the life she wanted to live. She said if she could go back in time, she would tell that girl to get up off the floor and go enjoy a great night out with her amazing friends. But she says that's probably because she's in a totally different place now and she no longer has those awful thoughts about herself. So when she grew her self-esteem, she found it easier to take better care of herself. And actually, that's when she started to lose weight. And this is, by the way, very consistent with what I've found. People think that when they lose weight, they will be happy. And I'm here to tell you, when you're happy, you will lose weight. It's actually the opposite of what you think. When you're happy with yourself, when you know how to respond to yourself, when you know how to soothe yourself, talk to yourself, comfort yourself, inspire yourself, encourage yourself, then you feel better. When you feel happy, then you stop turning to food. When you are upset and you respond to yourself like a friend, you feel happier. When you feel happier, you lose weight. So here are the steps that she took to get to this place, and she says she hopes that these tips will help you as well. So here we go. Number one, this is going to sound familiar. You can't hear this enough times, I say. Treat yourself as you would a close friend or loved one. We were just talking about that, right? She said, take stock of your thoughts as they come into your mind. Would you say that to a loved one? If not, get rid of it or reform it. If you wouldn't say it to a loved one at all, discard it. If you would say it in the situation but word it differently, reform it. And this brings to mind that great quote by Marcia Hutchinson. If you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. So try to always ask yourself, you know, what would I say to a friend? You know, is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? Her second suggestion, stop obsessing about yourself. Start thinking about others. She says it's so easy to get into that little bubble of kind of feeling bad about your body and bad about yourself and just wanting to stay in your room and crawl into a hole and crawl into bed and just hide from the world. But you need to get out of it, and you need to take your focus away from yourself sometimes. She recommends doing random acts of kindness or helping someone you know, or even volunteering. Anything that helps you remember there is so much more in the world than yourself. I know someone who started volunteering for a dog rescue organization, and she had been very depressed, terrible eating disorder. And when she was able to be with these dogs and receive their love and take care of them and just have this other experience that was so rewarding and fulfilling, notice the language, fulfilling, then she no longer used food for that purpose. So I think that's very good advice, as long as you don't take it as, oh, it's self-indulgent to think about yourself. Don't take it that way. Just think about, hey, you know, sometimes when we do things for other people or others who are in need, it's very rewarding and can make our lives feel better. Her third point is to forgive yourself and release any guilt or anger. She says, we've all done things we're not proud of, and we have all messed up in some way, but our mistakes don't define us as people. A friend of hers used this analogy, and she shares it, and I love it. I've never heard this analogy, but I think I'm going to keep it in mind, too, along with the Larry's wolves. So the analogy is, sometimes bad fruit can grow on good trees. The tree is good at its core, but it has produced something bad by mistake. But it's also produced a lot of good fruit. Good fruit never grows on bad trees. If a tree is bad at its core, it can never grow good fruit. Don't you love that? I love that. So if you've ever produced good fruit, you are a good person at your core. Good people still sometimes do bad things. They produce bad fruit, but it doesn't make them a bad people. Doesn't, if you've done something bad, doesn't make you a bad person. It means you're someone who did something bad, but that's not your identity. The next tip is, learn what your body needs and start giving it those things. Learn about nutrition and healthy foods. Find out which types of food your body thrives on. Drink plenty of water each day to stay hydrated, and move your body. We're not designed to sit at desks all day and then come home and sit on the couch. Even if it's not scheduled exercise, just get more activity into your day, like take the stairs, for example. And always remember to switch off and rest. With technology the way it is, it can be really difficult to unplug and unwind, but it's so important to your well-being. Find out how much sleep you need to work at your best, to function at your best, and try to get that much sleep each night. It's different for everyone, so it's worth testing out. Just, you know, find out what your body needs, sleep, hydration, and food, and give it to yourself. I remember, and this is so common. A few years ago, someone came in and she said, she's like, I don't understand why I'm not losing weight. I only eat 1,200 calories a day, and I'm not losing weight, and I'm exercising, and I'm just not losing weight. And I asked her what she ate, and she ate a bar for breakfast. For lunch, she had a protein smoothie, like from a, I don't know. It wasn't like freshly made. Let's just put it that way. And then for dinner, she had something equally as processed. Everything she had was processed. She wasn't eating any real food, and she wasn't losing weight because she just wasn't nourishing her body. So once she started replacing all of those shakes and bars and everything, I think she had Lean Cuisine at night or something. Nothing against Lean Cuisine. I'm not bashing Lean Cuisine. It's not the healthiest thing in the world. But frozen food, bars, all of this is all processed fake food. You know how we talk about fake news? This is fake food. And when you eat fake food, your body does not like it. So the more that you have whole foods, the better it will be. Try it. The last, is this the last? This is her last suggestion, which is have more fun and connect with people. When we get into this place of low self-esteem, it can really affect our daily habits and our social life. So don't forget the things that make you happy. Keep a list of them and make sure you do them regularly. Put yourself out there more. Connect with people again. We all need human interaction. We all need social bonds to one degree or another. We all need people we feel comfortable with. And it will help you so much more to have a group around you, a supportive group, while you build your self-esteem, while you take care of yourself. And this is such a good point, because remember, why do we turn to food? Because food is our first experience of relationship and bonding and being connected to another human being, is the experience of being fed. We're not just getting in nourishment, we're also being usually held and looked at and cradled and feeling safe and cozy and warm and connected along with being fed. And so in that way, food takes on the symbolic nature of people. And if people are unpredictable, unreliable, and unavailable, we may turn to food instead. It symbolizes people, and it's predictable, it's reliable, and it's available. But when you can reverse things, when you can recognize that, yeah, some people are unpredictable, unreliable, and unavailable, but for the most part, you're going to find people that are consistent and you feel safe with. When you trust people, you can turn to people instead of to food. You can have satisfying and fulfilling relationships with people instead of trying to get satisfaction and symbolically fill yourself up with food. So she says, look, these points take time to go through. Practice makes progress. Okay, I'm going to stop saying it. It's becoming obnoxious. I'm just going to not say it the rest of the day. You won't suddenly become confident and love yourself overnight. But when you are consistent, you will build healthier thoughts about yourself, and you will enjoy your life more again. And you will take better care of yourself. And if you're trying to lose weight or get in better shape, changing the way that you relate to yourself and using these concepts will help you a lot. Let me see. We only have a few more minutes. So I want to just share with you. Let's see. I had a whole other article I wanted to share, but I'm just going to give you the bullet points. Here is another article, 7 ways you might be fat shaming yourself without realizing it. So I'm just going to read the bullet points. We'll get more into it the next time we meet. Let's see. Don't keep smaller sizes just in case. Don't have sex with the lights off because you think you look bad. Stop using the phrase problem areas to describe yourself. Don't think of pretty and thin, or, you know, attractive and thin as synonyms. Remake all compliments. Do not remake all compliments into comments about weight. For example, what she means by that is when someone says, wow, you look great today, and you instantly say, oh, thanks, I've lost 5 pounds. Right? Don't do that. It may not be about your weight. Stop considering certain foods bad or evil. And stop practicing constant body comparison. I think those are the highlights of it. We'll get more into it, and I'll talk more about some concrete steps you can take to stop criticizing yourself all the time. And because the whole point of how do you lose weight without dieting, you start to identify what's eating at you and learn to respond to yourself in a different way. And you cannot respond to yourself in a kind, comforting, loving way when you're simultaneously tearing yourself down and attacking yourself. Those two things do not go together. But the more that you can be responsive, be a friend to yourself, be supportive, the better you're going to feel, the less you're going to turn to food. That's it. It sounds a lot easier than that. Easier said than done, but it is possible. So that is our show for today. Thank you for joining me on the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio, where I help you create a healthier, happier relationship to food and yourself. Listen live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, or listen online on iTunes or the LA Talk Radio archives. And if you like the show, please be sure to leave a rating or a review, because that really helps us. Thanks, and have a great week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.